The subcommittee on professional responsibility will come to order. First thing we will consider is amendment to House Bill 2157. The Attorney General, Mr. Johnson, will walk through the letters.
Mr. Chairman,
We will correct you with amendment.
But I think we have it, right?
We got it.
Well, you got it, okay.
No, it's just a second.
You never know, he may have changed.
Okay, all right.
Try to get on the front page of something, nobody will do it.
You'll recall at the last hearing, we brought to you a series of amendments. And I thought you may want to consider each one of them separately. As I read the consensus to the committee at that time, there was no objection to those amendments, and we combined them all into this one amendment that we have before you. And in addition, since that meeting, some of you may have received a statement from the ACLU, particularly Professor Beasley, making some suggestions, many of which we thought were really excellent. We subsequently conferred with him by phone, made some redrafts, and reached a basic agreement with him over the amendments. And basically what all these relate to is section 11 of the bill, which is that section that enumerates the exceptions to the basic principle that all public records are public. If you will go back in this, as you'll see, these amendments are not quite as distinctive as you might think. But we have attached some supplementary material, but if you'll go back in the back of it, we have just rewritten section 11 as it would be written if these amendments were adopted. And I'd be glad to go through that with
you. Yeah, I would do it. Like, what do you want us to start in?
If you go back to, I think, really the easiest way, because all of these just simply rewrite section 11 and the rest of it is conforming. Do you mean anything? This portion in the back end of that set of material I just gave you. This is section 11 as amended. First off, we got into the problem that certain types of things, you can have a different burden of proof than others, and so we separated from that standpoint. Okay, subsection 1 is the following public records are exempt from disclosure under this Act unless the public interest requires disclosure in a particular instance. And then first is those records containing the litigation. And the language we view there is the only changes are primarily to tighten that language down from the original bill. Secondly, the trade secrets, we have not changed that information.
I'm not saying like you are.
I'm sorry.
The proposed amendments to House Bill 2157.
Those 11 amendments, just so you go back in the back, there is a rewrite. At the top, it says Section 11 as amended. What it is Section 11 if you adopt these amendments. What we're trying to do is engross it for you, so it makes it a little bit easier to read it. The trade secrets, we have not changed. The investigatory information compiled for criminal law purposes has been changed to clarify what type of information is confidential and what is not. And I don't think they know it. It's just merely with some change in wording to tighten things down. Test scores.
Wait a minute. Claire needs who makes that determination? Right? This is very important. Anybody who wants to talk to me. It's the last line.
Oh, okay. Well, arrest records would be public records unless and only so long as there is a clear need in a particular disclosure in the course of an investigation. Thus, there would be a situation where if it was released, it would jeopardize maybe some other arrests that were in the process. try to get together with the DA, law enforcement agencies, and the press association. See if we can get some kind of agreement on standards of what information is released and what isn't in criminal law matters. But I still think that this bill only deals with those records.
Move the table or go to the library.
That's a matter of reflecting the standard. Test questions, the only thing is here is we change the language to qualify it as to before the examination is given or if the examination is not to be used again. In other words, just to put some lid on that. Production records, business records, these are to take care of course, primarily your statutory fees that are based on volumes of business, and to lump them all into one division. This was in the original bill, and I don't think there's anything to change it. Other than clarifying language. F was the same as the original bill. G was the same. Open hearing bill, did we leave any reference to real estate negotiations as being an executive session?
I'm sure it could be that they decided.
You took it out, except that. Public public interest by clear and convincing evidence requires the disclosure in this particular instance. Here we're trying to put the burden on the person who's trying to get the material. Pretty obvious why that kind of burden should be. Sub C was clarifying language. This is material that comes to a government body, information that comes to a government body in which there is no obligation to provide that information to a government body. It is provided in confidence, and the individual find the information after it is kept from confidence.
Safeway charged beer sales for the estimation of a tax on beer or something like that.
Well, it's more likely it is a hot tip. The report to the Secretary of State's office that candidate X is not reporting all his expenses suggests maybe looking at corporate records for somebody that has. So please don't reveal my name. Well, again, there is a public interest. It can be revealed with a court.
You know,
a compelling the public interest.
Do you know what
The correction provision that's the same as it was in the previous bill. The banking commissioner was one of the amendments we'd already submitted. The rest of these are amendments that we have already submitted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is that list attached on the
part of the report?
All right. If you look at subsection H, and then look in the middle of this material we have, it gives you what those statutes are. In other words, it nearly reincorporates all those present statutes that we feel that are still justified as far as confidentiality.
In that regard, the hospital people claim that 41.675 was inadvertently omitted.
Revenue Department. It is the question of tax records. The present statute have to give them a tax record to the prohibition against employees to fund the revenue. This would apply to other public employees who, for some reason or another, got a hold of the tax. Section 3 is to make it clear about segregation. And if the material, if the documents contain exempt material and non-exempt material, then it's duty upon the state to segregate that material. And then subsection 4, which was in the original bill, which takes care of the problem that we just made. And an example tonight, we missed one statute. We have gone through these statutes and gone through them. We have sent inquiries to every agency, as has the committee. But there is a possibility that we've missed something. This section provides the governor may, after a hearing, apply for an exemption upon making certain findings. And we use this same provision under the Administrative Procedures Act last biennium. And we did, we picked up one that we used on, and frankly forgot the corrections to do. The problems that you can imagine.
Did you reference subsection 1 or I think it was subsection 1 and 2 or 3 and 1? Who made reference to? Did you attempt?
Yes, I think I do. This is all begun or accompanied by a disclaimer in section 11 sub 1.
No, we did it.
Now broke it out.
Yeah, we broke it out. That was as a result of teaching criticism, which we thought was very valid.
Yeah, well, that's how it seems to be. Any objection I would have has already been outlisted by that change, and I think that the holding tax has to be resolution. The point was that the public interest test could be used to qualify a privilege, which otherwise you say was made absolute. That's well considered.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to take 5 minutes of your time.
No problem.
No
worries.
Do
you like to make a counselor or anything?
Anybody in the audience have any comments on section 11? Are you satisfied, Tom?
I haven't seen what it is.
Still Tom, I didn't
say I've heard no mention of section 11. It does not. It does not take care of Mr. Enright's objection. Because his view is that we ought to include, you know what that statute is, the one that's
351-06.
What is that?
351-06.
Two things. One is that he get access to his own record, and second rate, that you get access to the records of people similarly situated, if he's in a tenure case or something of that sort, where you're trying to make comparisons, that would show how he can see it. Mr. Johnson sent a letter to me regarding primarily classified personnel. At one time said, if the question comes to me, there isn't any question that I will decide that a person has access to his own personal records. But I don't know that he was talking about higher education and their rulemaking authority under 351 or 365 or whatever it is, whether he would feel that he could make a finding under HB 2157 of the chapter that higher ed had to make available to a professor his own records. Now this type of thing came up on the before the House Judiciary Committee on 2496, and at that time he suggested that maybe that bill might be forwarded over to this committee to be considered as part of the whole matter of public records. And I don't know whether it ever was officially forwarded to you or whether this committee was going to call it to the attention of this committee. Yeah. Representative Pollock is the name I'm going to talk to about. Kind of suggested that they saw my eye after the hearing on 2496 that maybe professional responsibility might consider the content of 2496 of that particular bill, 2496, as part of the 2196. Of course, it's a very controversial thing. I mean, all respect, Dave can give you, and I have an essay, I called it, pages and pages and pages long, why the faculty members shouldn't see the evaluations that their peers and others make about them. And of course, we feel that they should, and many of our professors feel that it's even unfair to them as evaluators to say that I am so chicken that I won't make an evaluation of my colleague and have to credit. But it's a very controversial subject, and one which, as I say, was considered over in House Judiciary, and then our feeling is maybe it's wrong someplace in this
one.
We need to work.
Let me say, Mr. Chairman, we haven't had a hearing out there. I'm not that familiar with 2496, so it would be my, as I had advised Mr. Enright at the time, he was talking about personnel that is records, but it is our general view. We have had cases of criminal welfare where recipients were asking for their files, the welfare agents before I came to our
Thank you.
Actually, the issue in that case was the question of information had been supplied, and it could be argued that the information was supplied and it was not required. It was supplied to Congress. It was reports of people that we will make this report on the basis that it is confidential and there's no legal requirement to provide that report.
What was the first thing you mentioned, Tom?
Was that all on the bill?
The first thing was on general personal records of a salary classification and so forth.
You have no sweat with that, basically.
And, well, he was barred during the statute, in the personnel division statute, because of public records. My response to that is, in the good bill, it's a public record. There's no question about it, it's public records, unless it can come within the personal privacy exemption. And as to a person who is subject to that file, I can't think of any situation where I would think there was anything that was not personal privacy, because as to him, as to somebody else, it would be.
I think the best we can hope is that if this bill passes and during the next 2 years, somebody's going to come to the attention of the Attorney General, and if it really does turn around, then maybe we'll be back there with the next one.
No, of course.
Lee, on 4B, page 5, the governor's exempting certain classes. Sub B requires the holding of public hearing pursuant to 183 before he can grant the exception or exemption. There are situations where it may be an emergency situation or it could be some hold on the disclosure until the determination is made. Wouldn't this procedure perhaps drag out for some period of time, during which time the disclosures would continue to be made until the exemption is confirmed?
Well, George, I understand what the problem is. I think basically, though, what would happen is that, you know, the security situation, the governor would simply tell them to hold or an immediate hearing.
Well, the complaint from Governor Johnson, didn't
it? Yeah, and the court would probably postpone it until the governor made the decision. I recognize the problem, but I think it was wrong.
You don't see any need for him to have some emergency authority spelled out.
I'd rather not do it, because the purpose of this section was to make sure when he does grant an exemption, it's done right out in the open. And I think as a practical matter, if that type of situation did occur, we can get it done. We can hold a hearing off it quick. I have found that I can move very quickly if he asks me to hold a hearing.
Alright, now do you have any comments on the first part of this one?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I page 8.
We have some amendments there, and are those
which ones? I mean, which? Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Are you getting ready to adopt an amendment before by Mr. Johnson?
Yeah.
Can I ask one question about them?
Please do.
It's not a very big one, but maybe I can talk to you. Trying to see whether it may be been resolved, and it may have been. I'm sorry for not being a little better prepared than where we are. I'm our legal department.
Well, you introduce yourself for us.
Ward Armstrong with Ward Armstrong. Was a little concerned with the language in section 11 of the original bill, subsection B, that reads information is submitted to a governmental body in confidence and not otherwise required by law to be submitted. Unless the public interest in disclosure clearly outweighs the public and private interest in non-disclosure. Now, our concern here is that frequently we'll submit information voluntarily. A good example would be to the Department of Revenue on something bad, where it helps them to do a better job of assessing the property if they have companies' private records, and we do this voluntarily, and many companies do. But we are alarmed that there's a possibility of that information being made public. And it has not been. It's not been a problem. Now, the concern of the Comer was the qualifying language in online 30, unless the public interest in disclosure clearly outweighs the public and private interest in non-disclosure.
Now, I see in the amendment, there really appears to be an improvement that's been made in, on page 3, sub C.
Yeah.
Except that it's kind of spoiled by the last clause in that, and when the public interest would suffer by the disclosure. I wonder if that could read, the public interest would not suffer by the non-disclosure.
Don't walk in with double negatives like that,
Warren. Well, I just start saying, Mr. Chairman, I raise that as something that is contrary to the legal department. I raise your attention and see if, you know,
well, I think it's a practical matter, Warren. If, certainly at the administrative level, if this came to me, you know, and the information had been submitted to Congress, and there was no requirement, I would probably a matter of course. Within. You know, there is not that you can be close. Because at that level, that's probably that would probably be my obligation to the agency, so it ought to be held in. Now, possibly, of course, it could say that it would be. Now, certainly, of course, would not require the closing, and this is a very overwhelming obligation. Mm-hmm.
That's the last thing I mean.
You would argue to a court, the court would be very cognizant of this argument, that if we would absolutely open the floodgates and if that came, we wouldn't get any information.
Well, I do feel
that there has to be, I think, some qualifications. There may not be a case where it's really Watergate or something
similar. You keep referring to when the question is submitted to me. I just wonder if you have tenure.
Yeah, the set of amendments that we gave you, which included the amendment of the section 11. The rest of those amendments, I'm going to assure you, are primarily the housekeeping thing. If you'd like me to, I'd feel super.
Well, we had some questions, as we did go through the first time on question 3, for instance.
Mr. Johnson, before we go any further, I have a note written in the on page 3. It says, how about a legislative council on subsection 3 of section 6?
We left that in.
No? You decided that was okay? That was a question we had before.
Page 3, section 6,
sub 3. The Attorney General shall serve as counsel for the state agency in a suit filed under subsection 2. With a question, legislative counsel should be included in this.
Legislative counsel
is
a state agency.
Okay.
Okay,
Elaine.
I guess we'll take these all at once instead of.
How about, are we going to use those amendments first and then we'll catch them as we go?
Let's catch them as we go.
Okay.
Now, section 7, we have a bill that makes reference to the district attorney representing us to be. There's a question about city attorney.
This is one of the policies in this whole area is the administrative review. I have no hang-ups one way or the other. The way the bill is drafted is the state agency, the administrative review, which you see the Attorney General's office, as the local bodies, which you see the office of district attorney.
How about those counties that have county councils?
Well, the point is, that the place the function, arguably, is the place in an elected official. Because he's subject to the heat. The DA is in a somewhat independent status. The specific reason for putting this language in is that, so far as state agencies are concerned,
is a provision that the Attorney General shall not serve as counsel for the state agency if he's decided against the state agency. So he doesn't have any conflict of interest. This simply says that the DA is in the same position as the Attorney General, and he accepts, of course, that he doesn't serve as counsel for a city or some other body that he never was and never will be counsel for.
Okay, now in section 8, my note says it was proposed by the Attorney General, but he really doesn't like it.
Now, this section here, I don't know, this provision here, I'm not going to feel badly about what to do with it. It did provide that where it is an elected official, he is rendered during question. For example, the governor. Right. Then there would not be any administrative review to go directly into court. And the reason for that was just to avoid the conflict between elected officials. You ran it down my throat, I guess I didn't check it.
Line 26, the left.
Right. There is federal provision of law.
What's the consensus on the committee? Should or should not be in there, so I'm trying to get out. Joy?
You're running into a situation here that you just get to feel like it should be.
What does it add to the bill?
Okay, this guy is an elected official, the governor. Somebody's trying to get records out of the governor's office. He says, well, they're not subject to disclosure. He's got another pressure on him that the bureaucrat over here doesn't have. He's got a gentleman over there on my left screaming and yelling at him and putting a heat to him. And that, I think, is one reason why he's an example of elected officials. It is only administrative review. They still be subject to a court order. Secondly, I think it avoids an unnecessary conflict between elected officials and state government. Between myself, the governor, state. And if the secretary is, let's put it in the real world, if the state treasurer wants to withhold something that he doesn't have any justification to withhold, you really don't need an administrative review. He's either out of his tree, or he's going to reveal what he's got.
And the court can make it.
And the court can make it.
Okay.
Some examples of some public records that might be in the custody of an elected official on a city or county.
There, it's a little bit more touchy because you get some elected officials. You get the county clerk, you have the assessor, you got the sheriff. It's a little bit open. And he's not quite as open as the pressure in the press. Let me take it off.
My feeling on the matter, just leave it in.
I think I would prefer to leave it in also.
The Attorney General originally wrote the bill. I think we should leave it in.
No. I'd like to take it out.
Yeah.
of the attorney's act.
Why, sir?
Well, I don't want to test you in the
You don't want
to what? Why test you in the
I wonder if that's saying something.
Okay, let's go on then.
Maybe they don't
know. No, that's the housekeeping down to. Unless anybody else has some notes on there.
Just double check.
Section 11.
Yeah, section 11 is doing.
That's where I had a lot of notes.
Delete section 12.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have to delete section 12.
Yeah, I took all the time out.
What happens if we get to section 13?
Got it, yeah, that we did state it. Mm-hmm. Let's read it by amendment.
Oh, yeah.
On page 5, decision amendment. Not the page.
I have a question about section 9.
Okay, Jack.
What section is it? Section 9, sub 1, where you give the court jurisdiction to join the public body in any suit filed under section 6 to 8. The 8 speaks to the elected officials. Page 11, line 1, and reinstating that subsection or part of it.
public officer shall not be examined as to public records exemption disclosure, so forth.
Oh, pardon me. I'm sorry, we did put in.
What's the this conflicts a little bit with the exceptions, with the part of the exemption, such as the public interest.
Now, what this is trying to clarify, George, is first, we have had a definite question, and the court itself, in the Papadopoulos, he was saying that the government is the why this section can have anything to do with public records. This is a
privilege and an exception.
Testimony of public
power on this.
Okay, in our view, we ought to get rid of the executive privilege. Then, on reconsideration, we have the category, or do I have the executive privilege to the same extent that we have it for public records? In other words,
or do we back that or not?
Oh,
Wayne said, on that, and as the communication of non-factual nature.
You better be happy, because I'm going to help you carry the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I will do one other thing. Well, okay, instead of reading the way it does now, it would read a public officer shall not be examined as the public records exempt from disclosure under the 1973 Act. Public records exempt on section 11, and if you adopted it,
then it's our exception.
It's a very qualified privilege. Very limited privilege. Communications within a public body or between public bodies of an advisory nature, to the extent that they cover other than serious factual materials and are preliminary to any final agency determination of policy or action. Any exemption shall not apply unless the public body shows that in a particular instance, the public interest in encouraging frank communication between officials and employees, the public body clearly outweighs the public interest in disclosure.
Now, in all instances,
frankly, this is almost a non-existent privilege testimonial because we just show it's relevant. And this court would probably admit that it will.
In all of the exemptions, is the burden on the public body?
No. Personal privacy is just the reverse. It's on the private, it's on the citizen kind of.
Is that the only exception? Burden on, in all their instances on the public body?
Basically, yes.
There's a catch-all provision indicating the burden is on the public body in other cases, but there are some of these cases, and there wouldn't be any circumstances one where the private party, in order to establish the public interest, would have to be able to examine a public officer. And there would be foreclosing doing that by this. I'm trying to think if there are any instances in those exceptions where the burden is on the private party to establish the public interest. And the only way to establish that would be perhaps to examine the public body and couldn't examine the public body by reason of this.
Yeah, but here they. Okay, suppose you put my deputy on the stand. And he said, well, I refuse to testify on taking his privilege. The burden would be on him, presumably we have to come in and intervene and make a compelling case to the court of why this testimony should not be confessed. I can't imagine. Frankly, I think you've already pretty much non existent for the privilege of the way it's written there. And that's my view of what it is.
So you don't see any conflict on that point?
Okay, let's go on.
16-7-20, did this get involved in the Bellis incident again?
That's out. That's been omitted. Page 15 to 17.
All those pages are deleted. 15 to 17 are out. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lines 1 through 19 are 8.
Was the committee feeling that you didn't want to incorporate any part of that bill into the building of the
I thought Norma, to rather jeopardize the state of this bill, it would be better to have that come out separately.
In fact, this would be the logical place to make it.
We're not too busy.
What is it, Simon? Well, we have a bill in judiciary which would allow a faculty member, a new teacher, hired teacher, State of Oregon, to see his or her record, which he cannot do that.
And everybody else?
No. The bill says that, but I don't agree that that would be a
and we seem to feel that this took care of that problem to their own record.
I don't think so.
Yeah, the
in this section 11-8, as you remember, the statute is one that is exempt. Therefore, any power the Board of Education might have in making rules to prohibit a professor from doing his own trial would not be affected by this bill. It doesn't seem likely to me that the board would be changing that.
I read that the rule.
I read that.
If I read the present act, the present act talks about personal privacy. I think the Board of Education, higher ed, is taking
that.
And
the
interpretation is they can't just in court.
Well, I thought that the Board of Education went, it's a teacher, it's a figure in faculty, and they have about 2 years of her record. But it also says, and that they could also, since we look at the other faculty members, if in their course discretion is necessary to determine a particular issue, his evaluation. And I don't think anyone on the committee felt the issue committee with 2 weeks that we had, I felt that the field could extend it to anybody else's session. But I thought that there was general agreement among the committees that a faculty person shouldn't have a right to see his session.
Right. Mr. Johnson seems to feel that
that is
you're
saying I can't do it anyway.
25-37 during that time, you can answer the question.
Well, was that the decision in the court case in the Papadopoulos? Did the Supreme Court say in effect that?
No, Papadopoulos involved a, if they wanted access to a report that was made by, not by faculty, but it was made by two outside academics.
Right.
And they provided the report, and so they would make the investigation. The investigation was a partnership, actually. And they provided the report on the basis that it would remain confidential. And that would come into the question of whether they were under an obligation to provide it or not. But it's always been my view, but I'd like to check that statute now, which I knew it was tremendous, where time left. Hold on just a second. I think maybe I can answer your question.
Can you speak about 351?
Sound that right?
Yeah.
351-065.
Personal records may be
access to your own records. But I would just that too, when you agree, and the board has no faith that there's no individual privacy involved there. You know, as the family member investigating is fine.
At least the first portion of that proposed amendment would restate
what the law
plain and simple language, but it could probably be confusing anyway.
Well, we might solve the problem by requesting an opinion from the city general, extending the question to the president who has caused the city to be able to ask us not to pass the bill.
And I agree with you. I do not think that I understand the argument, but I don't think you could have access to other things.
I don't know about any reason why you have access to other things.
I don't think anyone cares on the art committee about that either, but they certainly do think they have the right to do their own thing.
Well,
and
what are you going to prove? I'm trying to prove that you can do another evaluation. There is a clause in there being his personal private. In other words, he could not, the state board could not say he cannot have access to your personal file, period.
We know we're debating.
That statute would not permit it.
We're debating a question that's in another bill, and I really think maybe we ought to pick the one we have. And let you worry about that other one, George, because it's in your committee.
Well, I'd just hate seeing anything taken out of the personnel file, because when that person looks at his personnel file and his promotion or assignment or salary increase is going to be based on it, and he's looking at his personnel file and it's incomplete, he's being denied a promotion, and that he has no grounds, you know, really, to look at it.
He should probably
mention
that it's a qualifying withholding. And, for example, in Papadopoulos, he said to withhold his report. Now, here you claim an exemption that was submitted in conference. I have no question I would have to change what I said earlier, because that's what I told the state board at the time. And no question, the court was going to order him to disclose it. Even though it had been submitted in confidence, because here the guy's job was at stake, and they were taking it on that report and introducing it into the real report. But you have to have a balance in place. That's what you did.
If somebody knew that what they're disclosing may be revealed to the individual they're disclosing it about, that might keep them a little more honest in what they're saying.
On the other hand, you might not get as much honesty.
I don't know.
I'm sorry, it wasn't very appropriate way of stating that. I really
feel that that would be discouraging public participation in the governmental process.
You don't think that because the church is spending $5,000 in common cause or right to life and $5,000, are they not both in the same boat?
Well, I think that common cause or right to life should register as an organization. But so much of their lobbyists are, many of their lobbyists are just on a private citizens, even though they are coming for that organization, but they're not being paid for that lobbying or anything of the sort. But I think that the organization should register and reveal or disclose their expenditures and their resources.
But when you have to, if I remember reading again, I don't look like it, $50 limit. And the first place, it's unenforceable.
Yeah.
It doesn't speak to legal enforcement. And that's the sort of thing that I think would be discouraging in a public hearing.
On page 3.
What's the number of the bill?
2530. Lobby sees any person whether or not compensated or reimbursed for expenses.
And you have a real problem about, this gentleman over here in the blue shirt, every once in a while I ran into him in the bar. He's having a drink with my husband, and I've come to meet my husband. And he might buy me a drink. But in all the time I've known him, I don't think he's ever lobbied me on anything up here, because he knew that I was, the one thing he had to lobby last session, strenuously, I assume, was the bottle bill, and he knew how I felt about it, and he never asked me about it. But if he carried this bill out the letter, next July, when I meet him and my husband in a bar, we'd violate the law.
Couldn't you meet him at Sambo's?
Well, handshake. But I don't know. I worry about making this system worse instead of better.
Mr. Chairman, we have a suggestion. Maybe try to cut down the committee here. I'm going to just bring up to date on what our committee, I'm Dick Allen, I'm here representing the committee of the Capitol Club. Since the last meeting of this committee, we've had a chance to get together. And frankly, we have not come to any conclusions, meeting of the mind, on income and expenditure reporting. But taking first things first, we felt we could figure out what is a reasonable, workable definition of who is a lobbyist and what lobbying means. So let me just pass these around here.
You just happen to have them with you?
Just happen to have them. First of all, the existing statute
is one from the
as was brought up when the bill was up before, 2530, there was no definition of lobbying in that bill, but in our existing statute, 157755, there is a definition of lobbying, and that's contained in that first sheet you have, which we think is pretty good. It seems to take care of the usual and the usually thought of definition, and we think that it is concise enough to take in most of what most of us think of as lobbying. In our consideration of this theory, we thought this, that there's no reasonable, workable way to include a person off the street, housewife, rich changes, if you will, individuals who are there by themselves with some kind of a cause, because there's no agency, no person can reasonably work this into a registration situation. However, it is apparent that there are many, many organizations who come here as an organization, represented or not represented by an individual. And if the basic premise is the approach to this is to find out who is lobbying, who is representing what cause, and have a workable registration system so that everybody knows who's who, we felt that maybe these organizations ought to be brought in. Now, this first page that contains the definition that we have in our existing law, we did, in projecting this basic premise, we have asked Judge Wilson of Legislative Council to try to put this in the proper
phrasing and so forth, so that it expresses this theory. If you look on the page that does have our existing law, we changed paragraph 2, sub A. Any person who agrees to provide his personal services for money or any other consideration for the purpose of lobbying. That seems to go back to the, as long as you have a definition of lobbying, we thought it best to use that.
Dave, excuse me, did you take out what lobbying means? As I recall in your bill, there's no definition of lobbying.
No, the reason that wasn't done, I don't want to interrupt that, but the reason it wasn't done is that lobbying, the registration reporting are defined in terms of what a lobby is.
Got it.
You have to appoint by 30. And therefore, a separate definition of lobbying itself is unnecessary. To the extent that what you're really doing is describing what the lobbyist does, and then having reporting and registration requirements passed in terms of whether or not the person fits ADD. As you recall last week, Senator Ripper asked me to try to come up with a definition of lobbying, and the risk of submitting another long essay, I've put together a memorandum form for members of the committee. Various different definitions, this is basically a collation of existing state legislation in five or six other states which do attempt to define lobbying. And in addition, it's a large attempt to put it into perspective by showing various approaches, or five different approaches that a state might be in defining what lobbying is. And then finally, to show some of the constitutional problems of drafting a definition which goes too broadly and therefore interferes with the citizens' right to petition.
The present law is that Dick's talking about. Do you have a problem with that?
Not really. No, I think it's a good starting point. I have some technical objections to it that I think would help to make it cover more things.
Do you have a copy of his
testament?
Yes, okay.
With respect to the definition of lobbying, it talks about the extent of the influence, the passage of the heat of a measure. That makes it sound like it's specifically related to the text of a law. But under these terms, the person who lobbied against the Senate approval of a nomination of a person to be an executive officer of the state would not be covered by lobbying. So I would prefer to see, the term legislation used and then defined as broadly as it's done in California and under the federal act. And legislation would basically mean anything that could legitimately come before the legislative assembly. Anything that could be strictly considered would be considered legislation.
Okay.
Not necessarily the legislative assembly, but Measure 1.
The second thing recommends angles is in which House Bill 2530 goes beyond what the legislation would accomplish, is the House Bill 2530. Refers also to lobbying as administrative agency, and that would not be covered by the narrower reading of lobbying here, which refers specifically to influencing legislation and measures by the entity for the legislature.
Do you have any comment on this point about measures?
If measure is speaking in terms of, say, something that would be subject to the initiative of a referendum, that narrows the definition of lobbying, because that means that it's lobbying only with respect to something that's been voted to people, and that strikes me as much too narrow as that.
Mr. Chairman, we don't really hold any brief for the word measure. That's a matter of semantics there. And whatever is before the legislative assembly, we would intend to affect in whatever is the most understandable fashion. So we don't have any objection to the change in the word measure. We would leave that, I think, to legislative council in consideration of how those expressions are used in other statutes. It's generally understood that it's a generally understood meaning. We do have in our existing legislation, our existing law, provision that does take in public support. Down to B here. B would be changed to read, this is 2 sub B, any person, including a public employee, who as a regular part of his employment lobbies. That again relates back to the definition of lobbying. The reason for that is because in the existing law, the
attempt to include legislation is narrower than the definition of lobbying. And then to get to the this other consideration of groups of people who come down here maybe not compensated, he would be added to provide any person who provides these personal services without compensation as a representative of the corporation, association, organization, or other groups for purposes of lobbying. And then to effectuate that properly, we felt this, that if that organization was going to be interested in legislation, lobbying, that there could be some way in which they could or should designate a representative, so you know who's who. And this fee really would have to relate to a provision which is found in the second page we have, which substantially is a requirement that any association who it would be referred to in the subparagraph C would be required to designate a representative or representatives who would then register as a lobbyist and would probably then come under the provisions of the ballot of any registration requirements that we have. So we have our efforts have extended this far to try to make a reasonable definition of lobbying to include those for hire, those not for hire, who are the regular part of their efforts lobby for an organization or something.
This doesn't seem to cover, and you're not intending to cover, I assume, somebody who's just doing it for fun.
Well, we thought this, Mr. Chairman, that if we do that, then we just didn't figure that there's any workable way to have a registration system that would take them all in without wholesale violation or without really infringing on the right of an individual to come in and speak his truth if he wants to. And so this seems to be an area that we could involve in a registration program reasonably without getting things too far afield and making too difficult a problem for the registration department.
Okay, C, in your opinion, would take care of the right to life people.
Yes, and the steelhead people and the clean air people and anybody who...
The gun club.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Okay, do you have any, on the second page, are there any questions at this point?
Yes, the intent then is applying these definitions. These are the people who would be required to register and file for interest.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you some questions that I might understand. The 2A, the 2B, wouldn't this include just about every representative of the state agency?
Two A
or
two B? Yes, but that's existing law.
Well, now we're going to require them to do something they don't have to do now. That's why I'm wondering why. What is the necessity and need to have the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of the Lobby? The regular part of his employment is only this lobby in the legislature.
Let me
to include that kind of
well,
thing.
Well,
yes,
to
do. Let me
review
the existing law.
Oh, that's in ways and means, and we consider the agricultural budget, we must have at least half of that here and 42 employees down there. That's fine. I'm trying to influence legislation. And that's what George is suggesting doing, is right?
Yeah, we have it all the time that the administrator will bring three or four of his agency, depending on which section of the bill you're talking about, to provide funds for it. And you might be there for one day, and the next day they're back from the
bill. Maybe you could have people on the state somewhere.
That's what we're saying, right?
Well,
the problem's not doing it, though. It's getting way less of that.
Further on, in any bill, of course, there are exceptions if you can draw whatever lines you want. Now, the way I read the existing law, a public employee is a lobbyist under the definition. Under the exception, they accept any person who appears before a legislative committee or the governor, but who is not a lobbyist, and any elected official in this state, accepting members of the legislative assembly. So it would seem that maybe under a present system they are required to register, but when we get down to talking about reporting, maybe this is a proper area for some kind of exemption. We really do not hold any particular belief on how the public employees lobby. It would seem to some extent maybe they ought to be that there ought to be some way to know who's lobbying for what agency and so forth. But that would be the committee. I think under existing law it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the way I read his bill.
No,
I really don't know. I can't answer that.
But during a recent unpleasantness, when the elected heads of the state government were out for and against a particular measure, would that have been lobbying according to the definition here and should they have registered?
According
to the legislative council, major refers to something referred to the people.
They were lobbying the people.
Public employee that he represents a municipal corporation, then he would have to file. For instance, the lobbyist for the city has to file now, but the city officials come down here and lobbyist personally, they don't have to file it.
Is a named employee when he doesn't receive any salary?
employees. And as I said, there's been a so I would presume that a person who came down to the legislature to represent the municipal corporation would be a public employee. And we do not know.
Well, that's my question. The mayor is too bad and not pay the rent.
Come down here, they bring somebody from the DA's office and somebody from the road department and all these people and come down and lobby me. And none of them register. They come down about once a week. And they should. They want to come down here and get away from the public complaints. No. But I think they should have to register. I really do. And I don't know how to.
Well, that's sort of what he said. He couldn't figure out the identity.
I'll tell you why. The guy from DA's office is receiving taxpayers' money that are paying his wages, and those taxpayers should have some way to know that he's down here lobbying. The same with the guy from the road department and the county commissioners. And I think that all the people in my county should know that they're down here lobbying on certain legislation, whether it's for the citizens or not. They're spending taxpayers' money to do it. That's one reason.
I don't want to understand. Washington County before you get it cut. Leaving the regular part of the time, but it's rather easy now.
I think this is one of the basic questions that the committee has to wrestle with, is who is a lobbyist?
Yeah, Dave.
You might send us an English page 5 of the memorandum, I guess, and you intend to look at it. Because there you will see a, where the New Jersey legislature wrestles with that same kind of problem. I mean, their definition of lobbyist is the case of legislative reason. They make an exception that you wouldn't be able to provide for about 6 or 7 lines down. Provided, however, that a person shall not be deemed a legislative agent, who in relation to the duties or interests of his employment, or at the request or suggestion of his employer, communicates to the legislature, the governor, or the staff in terms of the legislature. If such miscommunication is an isolated, exceptional, or infrequent activity in relation to legal duties of his employment, then to proceed to argue this point, that the Attorney General shall develop and promulgate reasonable rules and guidelines for ascertaining whether a person's communication or communications are isolated, exceptional, or infrequent. That's one way, in effect, of delegating the authority to the agency that's reporting the agency to help flesh out the details, much like the IRS, for example, in drawing up rules for reporting of income or allocation of income, has detailed rules with respect to percentages in order to get that to the matter. I think it can be done, obviously, there's a line drawing at some point or another, but I don't think that's going to be the first. One might adopt these first things.
In other words, passing the buck to the Secretary of State.
Well, I think that the buck is fairly delineated here. When you say infrequent, I think that means infrequent. And while you might differ on the degree of time or job description, allocation of time.
We now register with the Secretary of State here again. Where do we register?
Legislative
Council. Legislative Council?
We tend to think that the longer definition you have, the more you have to start explaining what you've already said. And like this New Jersey thing. And
you're the first attorney I've ever heard who expressed this opinion. And I welcome it.
We tend to think that the definition of lobbying in existing statute went through some of those previously, and we think it pretty much reflects what lobbying is.
Okay. That's one of the things I'm concerned about in the bill, the definition. Another one is what protection the lobbyists have from the legislature? And do they need protection from the legislature?
No.
Can't speak for the lobbyists on that point, Mr. Chairman, because we have not taken that up, and I'm not clear when starting the testimony. Another thing, Dave, that I'm sure the committee is not going to like is including identification by number of the bills or resolutions.
I think that it's possible
to
resolve this in a way that might be acceptable. If I can outline this I understand one of the problems that the committee and the members of the Capitol Public had is that it would be burdensome thing without being reviewed. And that they wouldn't know necessarily ahead of time precisely what bills they'd be bothering on, and therefore they'd be making a mistake if they failed on the internal action. I agree that that's a realistic and sensible objection. One way that it might be resolved would be this. That in the registration statement, when the lobbyist registers in this case, that you have the lobbyist required to give a generic area, subject matter area, and then in the reporting, it surely should be known to the lobbyist all those bills on which he's reported, on which he's lobbied during the past session for which he's going to report now. Because he wouldn't report to the person yet. With respect to taking a position pro or con legislation, this is something that Tom Tarleton suggested great length last Saturday, and we have reached the conclusion that if it would help in any way to use the process of reasonable accommodation, that we would be prepared to say that
same position is very difficult because they may be in favor of all the bill but one section.
Yes, I agree. The Congress is in agreement. Because of that, but I think that insofar as the legislation and drafted would now require that, we would have no objection to it.
Dick, you know, Ward, have any comment on?
Yes, we would. We object to the inclusion of a requirement directed to Bill or Tom Chancellor before again. By and large, most lobbyists, when they register their position, who they represent, obviously. In situations where there has to be a category of interest designated because of the lack of some definition in there by the name of their employer, this is okay. But it just doesn't seem to me that there is any reasonable benefit to be derived from having somebody burdened with trying to designate a position from time to time on bail. But I don't think that's
warranted. I noticed that the last thing that I talked about the reporting was going to have it.
Amount of effort that's brought to bear on legislation that may say something about the extent to which
which side was heard more, simply because of murder. But I wouldn't go beyond that to say that it has any injury to have been whatsoever.
Yeah, that really scares me.
I'm sorry, Jenny, I'm not sure what
you're saying. Yeah, but you're trying to connect the voting records of the people in this assembly with the amount of money spent. I wasn't lobbying. I was informing my constituents and explaining why I voted for it or didn't. separate my efforts from the government's, or
I don't mean that. I mean your efforts and government efforts and efforts of anyone who has a legislative official voted for that and then start to make public decisions. I have no quarrel with that as being the bipartisan thing you're elected for. None whatsoever. Yeah, just a few points on it. First of all, is it reporting by bill number and identifying it and details, including statement of position, is not something we dreamed up. That's already law in several states, and I'm just going to put with that. That being done, if you're workable, it can work. We didn't need to go that far. And you're telling me tonight that there's an interest of reaching accommodation and we get this bill through, we'll back off that. But it bothers my mind, frankly, to say that while it's important to, it's important to disclose to your lobbyist that you shouldn't have to disclose what your lobbying is for. And that's almost as though you're saying, well, you're not, because you may not be effective, and it's not, you may not achieve your objective, and therefore it's improper to refer to you.
If the lobby is simply legislative to American, why would that not suffice?
Well, for one thing, it may be that secret opposition, or relatively secret opposition, for a bill is developing, and it may be terribly important for other interests which might be affected by that bill to know that a massive effort is being mounted to defeat it, for one thing, or to pass it. It's a way of keeping a hidden process, or making a hidden process moral. One way of getting noticed.
Can you give us an example for that?
Well,
the
example is always
in the system, and you have other ways of knowing that, you know, you are doing this thing.
That's the point, is that you are, even when you do know it, with a good telephone and a lot of interest in state politics, it's very hard to be informed. And a person sitting down in Medford, Oregon, or in Thomas Falls, may not know anything unless they read the Republicans that a massive concerted effort is being made to defeat that SB-3000. And until you know that, unless there's some form of disclosing that, you may be in no position to mobilize your own interest and get them into the political process. That's why I think you have to open that up a bit.
Would you say a massive effort is being made to pass House Bill 2529?
That's how you mean concept of interest bill?
No, that's the one we're talking about.
We're talking about 2530,
which, either one of them.
Well, we've made no attempt to hide the fact that there are 3,000 common charge members in Oregon, and at least, every one of them, to our knowledge, has been informed of all four of the bills in the counterpart of the city. They've been urged to write legislation and so forth. I don't think that's massive. It generates very little visibility. But I think it's appropriate that if that is the first time that a person who might be a lobbyist outside the state and occasional contact here would realize that his interests were affected, I think it's totally appropriate that he just put them into care so he can come into touch with them in the process.
That's a good question. Dave, I haven't heard of a massive
hidden
process.
Those terms
contradict each other.
It's hidden only for a certain time, but sometimes it's relatively well too late to affect that. The bottle bill, of course, is always pointed out in the reporters, and I'm not really qualified to speak on it, but I think that's the case where the large amounts of money came into this process in a very short period of time. I think it backfired, and that's the case, and because of several unfortunate incidents that backfired. But that's the kind of thing.
I think it's my understanding is that
speeches were made on the Senate floor with respect to an improper approach that was made to a given legislature, which I'm also led to understand was influential in causing persons to cast votes otherwise than in my vote. I don't think that the infusion of money is improper.
Skeptical with respect to that, because I don't think it's because I know something of the character and I know something of the nature of the court.
medical process that you may choose to continue. So I don't draw any conclusions. But it seems to me that's still a piece of information the public is entitled to know in case there are individuals who feel that that is so.
In case they want to interpret it.
Yeah. The problem is whether or not that's one of the risks of the
court. Yeah, I agree. I very carefully watch how you vote, Bob.
Well, I don't want to belabor all this tonight, but I just wanted the committee to get a feel from talking to the people what we're all about and what we're getting into before we start all these questions.
There is one more point that I should kind of consider, which is that the